Mr. Harrison, reel two.
Yes, I was saying, when you get down to the desert, I'm not talking about the Great Sand Sea, but below the Great Sand Sea, you get marvellous, marvellous sheets of sand. Oh, such as for miles and miles and miles. And we used to spread out. There'd sometimes be a quarter, half a mile between trucks. There were five vehicles of us in open formation. Of course, the only thing you had to fear were aircraft. And if anyone saw an aircraft, you used to immediately stop and signal aircraft, and the whole patrol used to stop. And somehow or other, Lloyd Owen always used to see these aircraft before anyone else saw them. There might be just a little tiny speck on the horizon. And of course, the drill was then to stop, face your vehicles in all in different directions, and just wait until it'd gone over or gone away, and then get off again.
Can you tell me more about your driver's work and the problems that you had?
You were responsible absolutely for your vehicle. You were responsible when you stopped at night to make sure you had plenty, you were full of petrol, your oil was right. The biggest problem we had were tyres. Tyres, oh, good gracious me. We used to carry loads and loads of tyres already made up. Every spare bit of your vehicle, including on your bumper bar in the front and along the side where you had tyres made up. It was because of the tremendous heat. You see, you'd set off in the morning with your tyres, say, £30 per square inch, and then you'd stop after an hour, and they'd gone up to 40, so you'd select £10 out, back to 30 again. You'd stop an hour later, and they'd gone up to 40 again, and so on, you know. And then, of course, when you stopped at night, with the cool in the evening, you had to start then and blow your tyres up again then, to get them ready for next morning. But you were responsible for your vehicle, absolutely. No one had come and help you. We had a fitter with every patrol who was available for anything you couldn't do yourself. But just same as when you got stuck in the soft sand, you on your vehicle were responsible for digging it out. Very, very seldom would anyone stop and give you a hand to dig your vehicle out. They'd keep going. You'd dig your vehicle out and then you'd go and catch them up. And if the going was bad, if you're in the Great Sand Sea, you know, you're getting stuck fairly frequent, and so you were leapfrogging each other. And although a patrol was a self-contained unit, your truck was also a self-contained unit. There were three of you on the truck, and you were responsible for that truck. And you all had your own job to do. I was a driver. I had a gunner on the back who was responsible for the guns. And then Lloyd Owen, who was responsible for the overall running of the patrol, etc., etc. And there was no rank pulled. When dinner was served at night, when they used to cook, used to shout, grub up, if I got in the queue before Lloyd Owen, I got served before him. You know, there was no, oh, I'm the officer, therefore I'm... No. Didn't work like that at all. We were a very, very democratic unit, and it worked exceptionally well.
What would happen if you drove at incorrect tyre pressure?
Well, then you used to get blowouts. The tyres used to explode. And then you'd got the job of just changing the wheel. And you could, in fact, one patrol we went on, we ran out of tyres. And we had to jack up one of the vehicles and take his tyres off, take his wheels off, to get the rest of the patrol home. Fortunately, we were within 200 miles. In fact, the patrol got back. They got some more wheels and they went out the next day and brought the vehicle in. We didn't lose a vehicle because of it, but I think tyres were probably our biggest problem. We very seldom had any problem with water. we had this wonderful thing that I think Bagnall invented, of the water siphoning into a tank, and then when the engine cooled off, it sucked it back into the radiator again. In fact, you could go the whole life of a lorry and never put any water in your radiator at all from the first filling. If everything was right, if you had no leaks in your radiator, the thing worked perfectly. You had no loss of water at all.
And batteries? What about batteries? Did you ever have battery problems?
No. No problems at all. No problems at all with batteries. The biggest problem we had with the Fords was the drop arms, which is part of the steering. You didn't really notice it when you were on the soft sand, because the sand used to keep your vehicle straight. But once you got back onto a bit of decent going, or particularly a tarmac Adam Road, oh, the wheels, they used to wobble, just as though it was a trick car, you know. And they were a problem, the drop arms. We were always having to put new drop arms on. The splines used to wear with the... You see, there was one area, McKeely. We used to call it the McKeely Stone Belt. Well, if you can imagine an area, you know, sort of, I don't know, 50, 100 miles square, that absolutely covered with stones the size of footballs. Well, driving over there was an absolute nightmare. You know, you'd finish up at the end of the day nearly crying, with arms aching trying to drive these damn vehicles. And of course it was no better for anyone on the vehicle. I mean, the ride was horrific. Imagine driving through cobblestones each the size of footballs. You know, say for 2 days, something like that. We used to hate that damn McKeely Stone Belt.
How close were the stones together?
Oh, they were more or less touching. You know, it was you couldn't. There was no way you could drive and steer and miss them. All you had to do was just make a beeline for where you were going, and just keep going. It was pointless trying to go left, go right, because it was all the same. You see, and we drove all the time on the Sun Compass. And, you know, I used to have to watch the needle and see, and it was pointless trying to miss them. You used to follow them.
So you must have had to drive about 5 miles an hour across these
stones. Oh, yes. Yes, yes. Oh, if that. Most of the driving in the desert was beautiful. It was beautiful. Particularly in the sand sea. You know, it's out of this world. Gorgeous. But...
Why?
I don't know. It was just so clean, and the sand was so clean, and if you got on a good run, it was hard. You could really steam along. And then we had a system for going over these sort of razorbacks. You know, you'd drive like mad up the slope, and when you got to the top, slam your brakes on. That'd break the crust away at the top, and you just go down the other side, making sure your vehicle was straight, of course, otherwise you'd tend to roll over. But it was lovely driving in the sand sea. Of course, once you got near the coast, in the western desert where all the fighting was going on, then because of all the armies charging up and down all the time, it was nearly like driving through chalk. It was dust we didn't use to like that at all.
What is a razorback?
A razorback is a dune, a sand dune. You slopes up gradually at one side, and then just comes to a razor at the top and nearly sheer down the other side. And just like waves. Just like waves on the sea. Well, sometimes the situation was such that you just couldn't avoid these things. You had to go over them, you know. And But we had a system that we went to. I remember it was nearly midsummer, and we were going across the Sahara Desert proper. And when we stopped at night and looked back, we could see where we'd camped the previous night. We'd just gotten a bit of really bad sound, and one chap, Mick Coombs, stick, stick, stick. And Mick was a good driver, very good driver. Anyway, we just couldn't get Mick, and we did something we didn't usually do. He was in such a state. We went and helped him, helped to get his vehicle on sand trays and sand mats, and then, damn me, within 10 yards he'd be stuck again. And then they found out at night, the mechanic, Alf Tye, went and had a look at his vehicle and found his back brakes were binding. Got sand in the cylinders or something, and so this was, his back brakes were more or less locked on, so obviously he was sticking, you know. But oh, it was a bad day, was that. It was a bad day. But I think most of the fellas, if you ask any of them, they'd say they used to love driving through the sand sea. It was a lovely, lovely place. I'd love to go back.
What do you mean when you say the Sahara proper? Wasn't it all the Sahara?
Well, I suppose it is all, but we always used to call, I used to call it the Sahara proper, which was the great sand sea, which started Siwa, really, and went south. So if you were going down to Kufra, you had the choice of going round, which was a hell of a long way round, or you could go straight over. You know, the choice was yours, sort of thing, you know. And if you went round, you had to go through Jarabub and on right the way round to miss it.
Which did you prefer?
I preferred going over, I think.
For what reason?
Well, I liked driving on it. It was so clean and beautiful and pure. And it was a lovely experience. You were driving in places which probably no man had ever set foot. You know, you were on absolutely virgin territory. I thought it was a lovely experience.
Why should anybody ever want to go around it then?
Well, I think it was probably quicker to go around. You see, you got good driving all the way, although it was a lot, lot further round. If you get a map of the of North Africa, the Sand Sea is, and we used to operate from two places. You see, we used to operate from Siwa, and we used to operate in the main from Kufra. And if you were going from Kufra to Siwa or vice versa, then you had this choice. If you were going up from Kufra to, say, go to the coast round Tripoli or somewhere in that area, you had no reason to go over the Sand Sea then.
What was at these two bases of Siwa and Kufra? What was actually there in terms of facilities for you?
There were marvellous places for water. Siwa in particular. Siwa are the most beautiful water. In fact, people say that they've done tests and the water from Siwa used to come from Lake Chad and right under the desert. But imagine if you can, you know. You've been out on patrol for 3, 4, 5 weeks. You've been limited to water. You're dirty. You're dusty. You've never had a wash. We never used to shave, of course. About the only thing we used to do, we used to clean our teeth, usually with the dregs of some... No, come back from this long patrol, dusty, filthy, dirty, everything, and these magnificent pools. There was Cleopatra's pool. We gave them all names. There was Cleopatra's pool. There was Figure of Eight pool. There was the bubbly pool. And the bubbly pool was a lot like I would imagine the jacuzzi is today. In the middle of the pool, there's a great big bubble came out, continuous, all the time. But the rest of the pools, it was crystal clear water, what 8, 10 foot deep. You could toss a coin in, you could see the coin go all the way to the bottom. Well, to just pull up with your lorry alongside the pool and just fall out of the lorry into the pool, oh, it's a feeling, you know, it really is. Because we must have stunk to high heaven, because we never used to have a wash, never used to have a shave. We must have been in a filthy condition. And of course, once we got back to base, we never used to shave, because when you went out on patrol again, the sun and the sand, it could nearly tear your skin off. Particularly when you got these bits of sandstorms blowing up. There's loads of photographs about where we just used to huddle alongside your truck and just sit there for 2 days. Couldn't move, you couldn't drive, you couldn't do a damn thing, you know. And it used to get in your teeth, in your hair, in your beard, in everything, the sand, you know. It was, imagine that, and then getting alongside this beautiful 8, 10 foot pool of crystal clear water.
And could anybody in the oasis use these pools?
Oh, yes. It was just an open oasis. It was populated by the Arab. We used to employ the Arabs. I think each patrol had its own chap which it used to employ for cleaning dishes and general messing around, you know. And so suppose we gave a certain amount of employment to the local Arab. We got on very well with them. Very, very well with them.
Were any of the Arabs ever taken on patrol?
Oh, no. No. Not those Arabs. We used to take these Secret Service people with us on patrol and drop them. Colonel Hazeldine, who was a big friend of Lloyd Owen's, we used to take him and his Arabs up. We took them up when the... I think it was Roger Keyes got the VC and got killed when they went to kill Rommel, and he'd gone back for Hitler's birthday the day before or something. But we never used any of the local Arabs at all.
Apart from the pools, did you have any other facilities there in terms of buildings or anything?
No. Each patrol had its own section of palm tree, shall we say, where you lived, you know. What a lot of us used to do, we used to get the local Arabs to build you a rush hut. Oh, they'd build it in half a day. Just a bit of a roof, because you never got any rain or anything like that. But it was a bit more pleasant than sleeping out in the open. And we each had a rush hut which we slept in. And every patrol had its own little section of the oasis which it lived in. Same down at Kufra. We all had our own little section of the oasis that we lived in.
Why was it not so pleasant sleeping out in the open?
Well, we slept out in the open all the time. When you were on patrol, you all slept alongside your vehicle, always in the same place every night. So that if you did wake up in the night, you knew exactly where you was, I suppose. But it was just nice to get back, I suppose. It gave a bit of like getting back to civilization, to have a roof over your head and that. But that was the only reason, I suppose. Kept you a little bit together, you got your own little... we never had beds or anything like that. We had sleeping bags, most of which we'd... Because they weren't supplied sleeping bags. We used to buy them from what they call the dead officer's shop when we got back to Cairo.
What was this dead officer's shop?
When officers were killed, all the stuff like sleeping bags and things like that, everything other than personal stuff was sent to the shop and it was sold. And we used to go in there and buy these sleeping bags. It was much more convenient from a bedding point of view than having to roll blankets up and fold blankets and make your bed. It was already made, and it was fine. It was a damn good idea. In fact, I suppose now they would supply them with sleeping bags. They didn't in those days.
You've talked about enemy aircraft, but were British aircraft helping you?
Not a lot. We once got shot up by a load of Hurricanes. It was during the big push we made when we relieved Tobruk, and we were coming back from a patrol, and suddenly these Hurricanes appeared out of the sky, and they knocked hell out of us for ages. We just left the trucks and let them have a go, and they were South African, as it turned out, and they'd moved to Jaribum. And we weren't far from Jaribum. Anyway, when we got there, Lloyd Owen went into the officer's mess and tore them off a real strip. And the sum total of the damage of this terrific strafing we took, after searching our vehicles, there was one bullet hole through one vehicle. That was all that hit. But it's quite frightening to be shot at by aeroplanes.
When was that you were shot at by the Hurricanes, approximately?
I'm very bad at dates, but it was just about leading up to our push up the desert when we were relieved Tobruk. Tobruk, as you know, when we retreated down the desert the first time, Tobruk held out, a little fortress all on its own. And then another push we made up the desert, we eventually relieved Tobruk. And it was just leading up to that push because the South Africans had more or less finished the Italians off down in Eritrea, etc. And we got large contingents of South Africans came up and joined us, and it was a part of the South African Air Force that was flying Hurricanes and stationed at Jaribum that shot us up. But they did no damage, except frying us to death.
What were these Waco aircraft?
Waco. Brigadier Prendergast, they wanted two aircraft for the unit. And the RAF would only supply aircraft if they could supply the pilots. And I think they offered us Lysanders or something like that. And then they found in Cairo, in a hangar in Cairo, these two Wacos, which were American private aircraft. They were sort of four-seaters. There were two seats at the front for the pilot and whoever sat at the side of him. Then the seats at the back was just like a little hammock seat for two people. And so they commandeered these, or bought them or something. And Colonel Prendergast flew one, and a chap called, a New Zealander called Barker, flew the other. And they used to, act as liaison, and they used to fly out and land alongside you and give you a few cans of beer if you were coming back from a patrol, or they'd fly out and drop your mail, or land and give you the mail when you were on the way back from a patrol. And of course, they used to use an awful lot to fly from Siwa and or Kufra back to Cairo, and all this. They had a very, very useful life. It meant the colonel could keep in touch with the LRDG and with 8th Army Cairo and with anyone else we happened to be working with at the time. They were very, and apart from that, I suppose they were great fun to fly, I don't know, but I suppose the LRDG could have managed without them, but seemed to cause a lot of pleasure.
Now, we've talked about the LRDG in generalities. Could we talk about specific incidents which are memorable that occurred with you, or special operations that you went on?
Well, I remember once, it was around Christmas time, we were coming back from a patrol, and we were in fairly safe territory, and we had a bit of a party. We got the rum bottle going, and Lloyd Owen was feeling a bit mongey and decided to go to bed. Anyway, we were having a party and we kept supplying him with rum, and eventually I got the very light pistol out, and I used to have a bit of a reputation for firing these very lights. I used to enjoy firing a very light, and I bet Lloyd Owen that if I fired a very light, he couldn't catch it. And so up this very light went, and it was a wonderful, wonderful sight. See this very light coming down, and Lloyd Owen with his shirt flapping in the wind, chasing over the desert. Anyway, he put forward as an excuse. Obviously, the reason he couldn't catch it was because of the soft sand. It was bad going, you know. And if it was good going, he'd have caught it easy. Well, when the patrol eventually got back to Cairo for a refit, the patrol had a party. Lloyd Owen was wonderful like this. He used to, usually Springford and I used to go up, see how much money he'd got in his account. And he used to tell us to organise a party to spend this money. And we were going to, I think it was Groppi's in Cairo.
Groppi's?
Groppi's, a big posh restaurant in Cairo, for a party. And I took a very light pistol with me. And when we came out for this party, I shouted to Lloyd Owen, "Are you ready, skipper? Get set." Bang, this damn very light went up. Brought Cairo to a standstill. Within minutes, MPs, military police were all around the place. And Lloyd Owen and myself, and I think Springford and Titchcave, two or three others, were up a fire escape outside the Odeon cinema, watching all these military policemen milling around underneath. Because, you see, Cairo was an open city. They were full of lights, and they'd never seen anything like this, never had a bomb dropped or anything like that. And a very, very great friend of the units was Rufus Montague. He was in the British Embassy in Cairo, and great friend of Lloyd Owens, and consequently a great friend of White Patrol. Rufus Montague was arrested and taken military police headquarters. No, there was a real carry on that night over that damn thing, but it caused a lot of amusement. But then, on a more serious note, we were asked to take an Italian and an Arab boy up the desert and drop them. And they were going to get a lot of information and bring it back, and we were to pick them up 2 or 3 weeks later and bring them back. And we didn't like this damn right Italian. We didn't trust him so much. I don't know why, no. Anyway, we didn't. And we got over the Murada track. This is the track that leaves the coast and goes down to the oasis of Murada. We got over the Murada track just about at dusk, and we drove on and then stopped for the night. Well, we never put guards on at night. We didn't think it was necessary. We were too far away from anyone to bother, you know. So we never had a guard. Anyway, when we got up in the morning, this damn night I had gone. And he was supposed to have about £1 million lira on him. He was loaded down with money to bribe his way.